The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. Markets are set to close out the best first quarter in a half decade. Futures working to close things out on a high note. Another day, another Fed official throwing some cold water on hopes around rate cuts this year. Those comments in just a moment. A historic day for crypto as FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried prepares to be sentenced for swindling billions from customers. We'll look at just how long he may be going to prison for. Plus, a bull bear debate on Tesla, the stock one of the worst performing in the S&P so far this year. And it's getting a fresh ding from one longtime bull. And Disney shares set to wrap up their best first quarter in nearly a quarter century as the company's proxy fight, it moves to the main stage. Why doubts about Bob Iger's second run as CEO, they may be overblown. It's Thursday, March the 28th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thanks so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour at the check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P 500 coming off another record close. Take a look. Futures just a bit mixed right now. Looks like the Dow would open up about 20 points higher or so. The NASDAQ in the red. The S&P right now, essentially flat. Right now, we want to look at stocks as they're wrapping up the week, the month, and the quarter today. So let's look at the major indices first. The Dow up just about 5.5%. The NASDAQ up more than 9%. But again, the S&P, the best performer, up over 9%, off to its best start to a year since all the way back, pre-pandemic, 2019. We're also looking at the top gainers for the index. Right at the top of the list, a stock we've been talking a lot about, Supermicro. This is not a typo here. Up over 250% for the year, followed by a trucker here, up over 100% for the year. NVIDIA, believe it or not, only in third place. We talk so much about it, up over 80% for the year, followed by Constellation Energy, up nearly 60% for the year. We're also checking bond market yields right now. So keep in mind right here, the benchmark at 4.22, pretty much stable over the last few days. But bond yields for the benchmark, they have risen 25 basis points since the start of this year. We'll talk more about rates coming up in just a bit. And we also want to look at energy, specifically oil. WTI and Brent up 13 and 11% so far this year, on pace for a second positive quarter in the last three this morning. Both of them up just about 0.5%. Brent right now trading at about $86.50 a barrel. WTI back above $81 a barrel, almost $82 a barrel. Okay, that is your setup. Let's now see how Asia and Europe are wrapping up their first quarter. Erbile Gumede is in our London newsroom with much, much more on the early action. Erbile, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. Look, the market across Asia is where we'll start things off, and it was a pretty mixed one then around the quarter, right? You saw there was significant moves around the Hang Seng, actually, out of Hong Kong. It was really the tech counters that seemed to move things quite significantly, but it wasn't actually all in a positive sense. So we're down around 3% there, so marginal losses for the first 3 months of the year. But big gains then out of Japan. While that market has certainly been propped up, 40,000 points certainly being a key mark there. 20% gained, as you can tell on that figure then. So a big gain on that front. Of course, that was quite significant because that entire market has been looking at the yen. And let's do a quick check on that, right? 152 is the key intervention mark then by the Bank of Japan. Perhaps could step into perhaps buy in a little bit more of the currency. Those have been question marks. We've sat just below that figure and right now at 151. On to Europe then very quickly as well. This is pretty much where we're looking today then. While we had seen some positivity across the quarter then for Europe, record territory as well for the French and German market. We're seeing that mixed picture as well today. The IBEX 35 out of Spain sitting in negative territory, Frank. Happy Easter if you're celebrating.
All right, Erbile, thank you very much. You have a great weekend as well. All right, turn our attention back to the markets. Fed Governor Christopher Waller becoming the latest Fed official to throw cold water on hopes for a rate cut. Speaking yesterday, Waller said there's just no rush to lower rates, stressing that recent economic data justifies delaying or even reducing the number of cuts for this year. For much more on this, let's bring in Gurpreet Garrywal, VP of Fixed Income and Liquidity Solutions at Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Gurpreet stumbled there a bit. Congratulations are in order. I know you got married since the last time we saw you. Great to have you back here.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me on again. Thank you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about this. A lot of rate rhetoric in recent days. You look at the 10 years I just mentioned a minute ago. It's risen about 25 basis points since the start of the year, but also since the start of February, since February 1st. But since that time, we've seen a real broadening of the market. Give us a sense. What's your view of the overall market when it comes to the Fed and cuts? The rally that we've seen, the broadening that we've seen, is it dependent on a certain amount of rate cuts, or does the market continue to move higher on AI enthusiasm?
Well, that's a great question. Look, markets are fast moving. They're information rich. We've seen a lot happen over this first quarter. We had no landing bears turn to soft landing bulls. You've had disinflation confidence turn to reflation worries. And like you mentioned, we've had expectations for central bank cutting cycles move back and move lower. But against that backdrop, what you've seen in markets is quite interesting. You have seen bond yields gravitate higher, like you said. But yet, interestingly, risk assets have been relatively unperturbed by that. Credit has moved higher. Equities have gained ground. So why is that? Well, okay, in my view, it's because the inflation data is good enough that you still are going to have central bank rate cuts this year. But the growth data is not too good that you risk reigniting inflation. And if anything, it means government bond yields are more government bond valuations are more attractive. So it's an opening to add. And there's still lots of other opportunities to be had in fixed income.
All right. So fixed income is attractive. I also want to get your outlook for rates. We had you on the beginning of the year. You had one outlook. Where are you at right now? Do you still see the same number of cuts? Do you think we're going to first see these cuts in June?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think right now, as the data stands and what our read of it is, we still do anticipate that the US Central Bank and the ECB will initiate rate cutting cycles in June. Of course, between now and then, we have several CPI data prints. We have the employment cost index, which is a key wage gauge for the Fed. So we need to see what happens with that. But at present, we still anticipate rate cutting cycles to begin this summer.
All right. So I know you said the bond market's attractive. I do just want to come back to the equity markets for just a minute. So I want to get your take on Altimeter Capital founder Brad Gerstner talking about whether or not the markets are in a bubble. Take a listen.
Look at the multiples, you know, Google trading at 19 times, Meta trading at 22 times, Nvidia trading at 31 times. These are not bubble territory, but you do have to get your forward forecasts right. So we continue to own, those names in our portfolio.
All right. So Gerstner is saying the markets are not in a bubble. Agree, disagree?
Well, first of all, I don't work in the equity space. I'm a fixed income strategist. And on that front, I would say the fixed income markets are still opportunistic. I think a lot of the enthusiasm that you've seen in equity markets this year does rest not just on those resilience you see in the economy, but also enthusiasm around secular trends like the adoption of AI. From a fixed income or an economic standpoint, I think a lot of the implications of AI are still relatively ambiguous. We still don't know the full impact on jobs, on productivity, on overall profits, and therefore potential growth. So it remains to be seen.
All right, Gurpreet Gariwal, great to see you. Thank you very much. You have a great day.
Thank you.
Have a quick programming note for you tomorrow. Watch CNBC.com for the key data point of this week. That's the PCE report. Morgan Brennan, Steve Leisman, and Rick Santelli will be online with the number, the news, and the analysis. Full coverage begins at 8:15 a.m. tomorrow, only on CNBC.com. All right, time now for a check of some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Thursday morning to you. Well, Discover Financial announcing CEO and President Michael Rhodes is resigning and is becoming the CEO of Ally Financial. Now, Discover only named Rhodes as CEO in December before actually taking the helm last month. His departure comes 1 month after Capital One said it would buy Discover for more than $35 billion. Meanwhile, S&P Global cutting Paramount Global's debt rating to junk. S&P citing pressure on cash flow because of the continued decline in the company's broadcast and cable TV business. The company, which is controlled by the Redstone family, has been weighing a potential sale of the company. And TikTok launching a more than $2 million TV ad campaign as the Senate reviews the bill that could ban the app here in the U.S. The ad started running yesterday in Nevada, Montana, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, according to previously unreported data from Ad Impact. Now, those states are represented by vulnerable Senate Democrats who are running for re-election, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you just a bit later in the show. All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, a landmark day for the crypto sector as FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried prepares to be sentenced for his multi-billion dollar fraud. We'll look at just how long he could be going to prison for. Plus, at first, it was Napster, now AI presenting the music industry's next challenge. Our Julia Boorstin looks at how record labels are working to protect their artists. And later, to own or not to own? That is the question. About Tesla, that is, as the stock slide intensifies. A very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at the Dow year-to-date gainers right there at the top of the list, Walt Disney. We're going to talk much more about the Magic Kingdom and that proxy fight coming up later in the show, followed by Caterpillar, American Express, and Merck. Merck shares recently getting a boost after the FDA recently approved a new treatment for lung disease from that drug maker. All right, turning our attention now to the crypto space. Bitcoin climbing back above 70,000, taking a look at where it's moving right now. At about 70,740, just about. So one of the key figures in the sector's recent troubles, that's Sam Bankman-Fried. He's set to be sentenced today over the implosion of his crypto exchange, FTX. CNBC tech reporter Mackenzie Sagalos, who's been covering this case since it first started back in 2022, joins us now. Mac, good morning. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Frank.
All right, so give us a sense, Mac. You've been covering every step of this. What are you expecting when this kicks off the court in court at 9:30 this morning?
So, Frank, this is quite literally Sam Bankman-Fried's final chance to make a direct appeal to Judge Lewis Kaplan. This is an old school, no nonsense judge who's a legend in the Southern District of New York. He had zero patience for Sam's demeanor on the stand in October. And that's really the thing that we're looking out for here. Can Sam change Judge Kaplan's mind? And the only way that he can really do that is, one, if he takes a stand, and then two, if this time around he accepts some responsibility for what happened to FTX customers. The judge will also give the government and the defense one last chance to make their arguments. And without a jury in the room, there's nothing that's really off limits in terms of talking points. Bankman-Fried just added another attorney to his roster, Mark Mukasey. This is a former federal prosecutor who helped the Nikola founder get a 4-year prison sentence instead of the 11 years that prosecutors were after. I am very interested to hear what he might have to say later today. And it's also possible the victims will take the stand. From there, it's all Judge Kaplan, who tends to give lengthy speeches around his rulings, like when he sent SBF back to jail in August.
All right. So, Mac, what are you hearing in terms of possible sentencing, and what could it mean for the crypto sector? When this case first broke, we saw crypto prices decline. Does this sentencing, does it give people more confidence in crypto in your mind?
Yeah, great question. So in terms of sentencing, the max sentence here is north of 110 years. Now, prosecutors are angling for something in the range of 40 to 50 years. And then the defense team says that they want something in the range of 5 to 6.5 years. So we're obviously seeing people at different ends of the spectrum. I've spoken to multiple former federal prosecutors, white collar defense attorneys, trial attorneys, and the consensus here is that they'll see something halfway between those two ranges. So something in that 20 to 30 year space. But to your larger point, what does this mean for the larger crypto sector? And it's been a good thing. We've seen record high prices in the last 6 months, and especially in this last month. And what that speaks to is the fact that a lot of these grifters are being washed out, and that's cleaning up the sector. It's better optics. You're seeing asset managers like BlackRock jump into the space, which is a net benefit.
All right. Mackenzie Sagalos, live at the NASDAQ. Great to see you, Mac, as always. I know you're actually heading to the courtroom right now. Good luck today.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, as the S&P prepares to wrap its best first quarter in about a half a decade, while Jim Cramer is saying fear around a potential pullback is just not an option.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We are watching shares of Amazon this morning. The stock coming off a nearly 1% pop yesterday after announcing it will invest another $2.7 billion backing Anthropic. That startup is widely viewed as a top competitor to OpenAI's ChatGPT. Amazon previously announced an initial $1.2 billion investment in Anthropic back in September. Right now, shares fractionally lower, but again, about a 1% pop yesterday on that news. All right. We also have a news alert now around artificial intelligence and the Biden administration laying out new rules around the technology. Megan Casella joins us now with much more. Megan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. The Biden administration is releasing its first set of binding rules today on the use of artificial intelligence at federal agencies. These are going to be focused on oversight, transparency, and safety. Now, on the first, these are going to require all agencies to designate a chief AI officer and establish an AI governance board within the next 2 months. Agencies will also need to publish an annual report on their AI use and how they're managing risk, and establish safeguards for AI use by the start of December. Now, the White House says that these are rules meant to protect Americans' rights and safety. The example Vice President Kamala Harris gave in announcing these measures was that if the Department of Veterans Affairs wanted to use AI to help diagnose patients at a VA hospital, the VA would first have to prove that an AI system was not discriminating on the basis of race or anything else. Now, these rules were developed in consultation with the private sector, and they only apply to federal agencies at this point. That will likely change, however, because the Office of Management and Budget is also launching a fresh rulemaking process today that will ultimately lead to guidelines on AI use at private companies who work as federal contractors. Now, Frank, while the administration wants these rules in place, White House officials are also encouraging the use of AI. They say they're planning to hire 100 AI professionals into government roles by this summer, and they're telling agencies to, quote, responsibly experiment with generative AI in particular. Frank?
All right. So right now, these rules, they only apply to the federal government. But in the near term, even long term, what does this mean for companies?
Right now, yeah, you're right. It doesn't mean much for companies at the moment. But on one hand, they do hope that this becomes sort of a model for how companies here and governments globally start to regulate their own use of AI. They also are going to start to regulate, like I mentioned, how federal contractors, private companies who work at federal contractors, will ultimately have to follow some set of similar rules. This also applies, I will say, to the technology that the government is using. So even though they're not developing their own AI, in most cases, they're using private sets of AI, they have to abide by these guidelines even as they use that privately developed AI system.
All right, our Megan Casella live in D.C. Megan, thank you very much. Also, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo will have more on the Biden administration's new rules around AI at the first ever CNBC Changemakers event. That event taking place in New York on April 18th. To learn more about the event, scan the QR code or go to cnbcevents.com/changemakers. All right, let's stick with AI. Two decades after music piracy threatened the music industry, it's now grappling with the rise of artificial intelligence. Our Julia Boorstin takes a closer look at the potential impact the tech could have.
This may sound like Demi Lovato, but it's not. It's an AI-generated song created by YouTube's DreamTrack tool, part of Google's latest experiments in generative AI. The company is partnering with record labels, including Universal Music Group, to create guardrails to protect artists' voices from being exploited and to enable them to profit from custom AI-created music.
Now, Julia, you are like the sun.
DreamTrack, which is being tested as an integration into YouTube's TikTok rival, YouTube Shorts, allows creators to make AI-generated songs with the voices of famous artists. 9 big-name artists are participating and being paid for their participation by YouTube, from John Legend to Demi Lovato and T-Pain.
Drinking tequila, hanging with my friends.
Yeah, AI is crazy, bro.
I got 1,000 people watching me.
Bro, I ain't made a song like this in years.
We were the first TV journalists to demo the new tool alongside Melanie Wilking, a YouTube creator who's part of the initial test. And we asked DreamTrack to create us a song about the stock market. Two decades after music piracy threatened the music industry, it's facing another reckoning as music labels and artists decide whether to embrace the new tech or risk being left behind.
We have to figure out how to effectively partner to drive innovation, to be able to adapt to new technology. I think you'll see that we've worked to try to understand where the opportunity is and to get out in front of it.
YouTube wasn't the first to experiment with AI-generated music. Last year, the artist Grimes invited her fans to use Gen AI to create songs in her voice. If the songs are a hit, she says she'll split royalties with them. As to when YouTube's DreamTrack tool will be widely available, the company's still working on it.
We know that there are challenges and a lot of work that we need to do to get to the place where we will be able to fully scale a product. In other words, it might take some time before you have the ability to make your own song.
In the meantime, 100 of YouTube's creators and their millions of fans are getting a window into what the future of custom AI music will look like. For Worldwide Exchange, I'm Julia Boorstin.
All right. Coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the latest shot in the ongoing U.S.-China tensions, what the Treasury Secretary is saying ahead of her trip to meet with leaders in Beijing. And as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month, we're sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC changemakers. That's an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming business. As we head to break, here is WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelberg.
I was always very curious. So I say curiosity drove me, but confidence built me. I tell a lot of young women today, raise your hand, build your capability, good things will come. That's what happened to me, and that's what we've been doing at the WNBA. That's what a changemaker really is someone who's gonna make decisions to effect change, to transform a league of our size and scale, and I'm thrilled with where we are right now.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Collins. Get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P 500 coming off another record close. Take a look. Bit of a mixed picture right now. So we see the Dow off of its highs of earlier today, looking like we'd open up pretty close to flat. The S&P fractionally lower, the NASDAQ deep in the red right now. We'll talk much more about that later in the show. We're looking at stocks right now, looking to wrap up the week, the month, and the quarter today. With the Dow, you can see right here, up just about 5.5%. The NASDAQ, it's up more than 9%. The S&P up over 10%. Its best start to a year since 2019. And we're also looking at some top gainers for the index. Supermicro up over 250%. This is not a typo. We've been talking a lot about that chip maker as part of the AI boom, followed by Old Dominion. This is a trucker up over 100%. NVIDIA right here in third place. A different story when we talk about the Mag 7 member Tesla moving in a different direction. It's the biggest laggard on the S&P so far this year, down more than 27%. Dan Ives from Wedbush, who joined the show earlier this week, becoming the latest to cut his price target on Tesla, going from $315 down to $300. He joins the chorus of bearish calls from Citi, Bernstein, Redburn, Atlantic, and Mizuho. Key to the falling sentiment is lower estimates for Tesla's first quarter deliveries due next week. Analysts cite more competition and slowing EV demand growth, though many say Tesla's decision to give a one-month free trial of its full self-driving software that will help boost second quarter volumes. Let's get the bull and bear cases for Tesla's road ahead. RBC's Tom Narayan is our bull, and our bear is Craig Irwin from Roth MKM. Good morning to both of you. I want to start off. We got to start off with the bear case, I think. Craig, you're one of the most bearish on the street. Your price target is about half what the street's looking for. Is that just based on a slowdown of sales, Chinese competition, or is there something else in there?
You know what we see is Tesla is fundamentally overvalued, egregiously overvalued. They don't really have anything that Toyota doesn't. Why would they trade at such a massive premium? You know, you look at a company that's traded like a growth company, but there is no growth here in the first quarter. We're going to see continued price cuts, you know, over the course of this year. I think, you know, this little price increase for April 1st is a little bit of gaming, trying to juice the numbers in what's going to be a very weak quarter. And I think consumers out there expect price cuts later on this year. So you're going to see, you know, more negative momentum in the stock. And that's the most important thing. Retail props this up, and I think retail is going to keep coming out and drive the stock down.
All right, so you are very bearish. We're going to go to the complete other side. Tom, you're pretty bullish. Your price target's about 50% higher than the street. So you believe that people may be overblowing the growth concerns, even with China down quarter over quarter, Europe also down quarter over quarter. We don't talk often about that story. But you say the lofty valuation of Tesla, 60 times forward earnings, that has nothing to do with EVs in your mind.
Yeah, that's right. And I actually agree with what your speaker was saying just now with what's happening in the quarter. I think everybody knew Q1 was going to be weak. There was a big pull forward of demand into Q4 because of the IRA expiry. There was also the Red Sea impact on Europe in February this year. We've known that things were slowing down. Model 3, Model Y are getting saturated. The newer model isn't coming until 2025. This is a company you need to look at in tectonic terms. And in any event, this is not Toyota. It's not a car business. It's an autonomy business, and it's an energy storage business. I'd love to hear what your speaker thinks of the valuation of energy storage, going from 100 gigawatt hours to 2 terawatt hours, a 20-fold increase. Tesla's 15% market share of that business, and those margins are actually better than the auto business. I think that'll be worth more for Tesla than its car business. We haven't even talked about autonomy. Giving FSD for free for a month could be really big to catalyze growth here.
Okay.
And get volumes reignited for Q2.
All right. So, listen, you're throwing down the gauntlet. That's what we want here, Tom. We appreciate that. So, Craig, I'm going to come over to you about the storage question first, and we'll get back to full self-driving. What is your answer about the fact that he's basing the valuation again on autonomy and also storage?
So, autonomy, robotics, and storage are the three subjects that people care about most. I'm the only analyst on the sell side, only analyst on the street that actually worked in the battery industry, worked in the storage industry. I'll tell you, margins there are razor thin. I work with a number of companies that are very active there. You know, a couple of years ago, you saw the exit of NEC, which dominated that market. You know, there's a lot of frothy bullishness. We have to be careful with expectations. There's some good companies out there. Tesla is one of them. But, you know, you don't get to, you know, $600 billion valuation on storage. That's just not rational.
Okay.
So robotics, Boston Dynamics is the winner. You know, Hyundai bought that for $1.1 billion from SoftBank. You know, maybe it's worth 10 today. It's not worth 600. You know, and this whole AI thing, FSD, you know, if you're going to do level 4, it's going to consume more electricity, more electrons to support the compute of that level 4 autonomy than the drivetrain. That's a non-starter. So, you know, I look at this and I say there's some fundamental flaws in the bull thesis. And, you know, it's egregiously overvalued.
All right. So, Tom, I think he answered a couple of your points. He also worked in the battery industry. But I want to come back to you, Tom. I know you're very bullish. But when it comes to full self-driving, haven't we seen a lot of difficulties when it comes to this? We've seen some other companies get out of that space just because of the trouble executing.
Yeah, that's right. And I just really quickly just want to say energy storage, Tesla's actually already making more profit on that business than they are on their car business. I actually went to the Lathrop facility a few weeks ago and saw it firsthand, also met with utilities who suggest the growth there. On FSD, you're right. It's really difficult to do this. That's why a lot of companies are pulling out of it. FSD, I just want to correct also your speaker. It's not level 4, right? It's level 2 plus. It's 80% of your driving on highways. Tesla's the only one that does automated lane changing. It does exits for you. I think a lot of the concerns have been these accidents that you see happening on small roads. That's when you and I can just take the car over. But the 80% of the driving that happens on highways, I'm telling you, this product is amazing. You guys need to try it. It is simply amazing. No other really automaker has something on the road with this many miles. And now they're going to get to try it. I do think the pricing is too high. Once they drop the pricing, attach rate goes up. You could get an economy multiple on that. So it's a level 2 plus offering, not level 4 just yet.
All right, we're getting a little bit in the weeds with level 2 plus, level 4. But you're saying it's still in the early stages of full self-driving. I think that's the real point that you're trying to make. Before I let you guys go, sometimes this stock, it trades on the delivery numbers. So, Tom, first you, what's your expectations for deliveries? Do you think that Tesla meets those estimates or not?
Yeah, I mean, I just cut my estimates yesterday, actually. I'm at 446. So, yeah, it could even come in below. So I definitely think it could. Estimates are, I think, at 461 as of yesterday. So it could probably miss, but I think the buy side is already there.
But it doesn't change your bull case. Craig, giving you the last answer, then we got to get going.
You know, something like 430, 440, that's where I think the numbers come in. It all comes down to this tap up on prices in the U.S. Right. Does it actually pull forward much?
If they beat, though, does that change your rating, your price target? Does it change your view at all? It
doesn't change anything fundamentally.
All right, that's our bull bear debate. We've got to leave it there. Tom Narayan, Craig Irwin, thank you both. Craig, thanks for being here. Time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. We're going to toss things back over to Silvana Hanau with those. Silvana, good morning once again.
Hey, Frank, good morning again. Well, Norfolk Southern's proxy fight with activist investor Ancora Holdings ratcheting up. Ancora is pushing to nominate 8 directors to the board and oust Alan Shaw as CEO. But Shaw firing back on last night's Mad Money over the impact of the proposed changes to shareholders. Listen in.
We've offered a settlement. Their response has
Can
been...
Can you give some inkling, or is that private, about what the settlement is?
We've offered a couple board seats.
You have?
Yes.
To people you interviewed, you went through the process, did you?
We went through the process. We offered seats. Ancora's looking for wholesale change. And our board firmly believes that drives long-term shareholder destruction.
Meanwhile, U.S.-China tensions showing few signs of easing. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warning of China's solar panel surplus, saying the country is treating the global economy as a dumping ground for cheaper, clean energy products. Yellen adding the spillovers are depressing market prices and squeezing manufacturing here in the U.S., which she plans to discuss during her meeting with Chinese officials next week. And speaking of alternative energy, Hyundai says it's considering plans to exclusively produce all electric vehicles at its new $7 billion plant in Georgia. Speaking to CNBC at this week's New York Auto Show, Hyundai's president says his company is preparing for a ramp up in EV production, even as adoptions of EVs take a slower than expected start. He adds Hyundai remains committed to EVs, but also knows hybrids may be better for some consumers, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. Coming up, Jim Cramer has some advice for investors that are worried about a pullback. And as the bitter proxy battle between Nelson Peltz and Disney nears its end, CEO Bob Iger has been hit with a lot of criticism. But our next guest says it's time to separate the fact from the fiction. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at the NASDAQ 100 gainers year to date. Right there at the top of the list, Old Dominion, that's the trucking company, up over 100%, followed by chipmaker NVIDIA, Constellation Energy, and DoorDash, plus Meta Platforms, rounding out the top 5. All right, turning our attention now to Disney, set to close out a strong first quarter, up more than 30%, its best Q1 performance since 2000. The stock getting a boost yesterday thanks to a new note from UBS suggesting the stock still has more gains ahead thanks to its streaming business. Disney also reaching a settlement with a Florida tourism board backed by Governor Ron DeSantis. It resolves a lawsuit about who controls the special governing district around Walt Disney World. The development coming ahead of Disney's shareholder meeting next week when the proxy fight with Nelson Peltz and his firm Trian Partners, it finally comes to a head. For much more on this, let's bring in Jeff Sonnenfeld. He's the Senior Associate Dean for Leadership Studies at the Yale School of Management and a CNBC contributor. He is also the author of a new piece in Time this week titled 5 Myths Critics Get Wrong About Bob Iger's Performance at Disney. Jeff, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Good to be with you.
All right. So this is a pretty contentious situation. In fact, I was driving in. I think I was listening to either YouTube or Spotify. Disney's actually running ads reminding shareholders they have to vote by April the 2nd. I want to get into this with you. You're clearly on the Disney side based on the article. Your news article cites the performance of Disney under Iger since he returned up 27% over the other peers. Where did this myth of a lack of stock performance in your mind, where did it come from?
It came from the master of illusion. You know, you've got a genuine wizard here. Of course, this is Bob Iger. But then you've got Nelson Peltz, who has an amazing way with his locker room bravado, his distraction, and his comically long tirades on media to give you a lot of false data. So it's, you know, because he wants to distract from his own performance. Peltz, he's been down in 80% of all the boards he's been on, 22 boards. He's been down like 15 of them, well below the S&P, consistently. The only places that performed under him at all were the few places he served on the board because they didn't listen to him at Procter & Gamble and GE. They kind of okay. Just ignored him.
So, Jeff, it sounds like the bottom line is you think the underperformance critique is actually backwards. You believe that Nelson Peltz should be criticized for underperformance in the companies that he's involved with.
Frank, that's exactly right. Right. I should be asking you the questions. Your response is so much better than mine. The myths there are ridiculous. He says that Iger and Disney underperforming. It's they're soaring okay. past their media peers. And as you mentioned, up 27%. They're actually up now 30% thanks to the UBS upgrade and okay. all the rest. And this has nothing to do with being stalked by Peltz. UBS didn't upgrade with anything having to do with
okay.
Peltz.
I want to go to one of your other myths. According to your article, there's another myth that Bob Iger has overpaid for acquisitions. So we're going to show the audience some of your research here. According to your research, Disney has tripled its investment in Marvel, much more than that when it comes to Pixar. That's what I think of as kind of tent poles of the Disney content empire. Is that critique fair, however, when we talk about the acquisition of the Fox assets? That's kind of a different story. And you got some math there that you say makes it all make sense.
Yes, drive them to the Time Magazine article in case it gets too dense oh, my gosh, good for you that you have it there. Is that the money that they pulled in by selling right away Sky, you know, they got $15 billion for that. Got $11 billion for selling off the regional sports network, selling to arts and entertainment, selling that off to Hearst. They've got a great valuation in a big Indian operation, a Star. They've about $12 billion there. The Hulu valuation is $12 billion. This starts to add up after a while before you even get to these incredible franchises that they get in the deal here as too. Some of their hottest property, which has come in. So this has been quite valuable. It's actually probably worth, easily $74 billion, and they paid $71 okay. on it. So it's hard to say this is a bad deal, but Nelson Peltz confuses the math, like he confuses Bob Chapek's term of office with Bob Iger's when he calculates things.
Okay. And Jeff, by the way, you can't be that surprised we have the graphic. You're on CNBC all the time. We're prepared. Come on, man.
You really? But at this hour, Frank, I don't know how you do it. It's fantastic.
So coming up, we obviously have the shareholder meeting. Again, I'm hearing ads when I'm listening to the radio that Disney wants to remind shareholders they have to vote by April the 2nd. What are your expectations? These myths that you're talking about, do you think that leads to a victory for Nelson Peltz, or does Disney win out in this situation?
Disney is going to win out. You take a look at the incredible people such as George Lucas, maybe the largest owner, and taking a look at Miss Disney and the great legacy there, all these great folks who've lined up behind them, not to mention, Jamie Dimon. This is an all-star board. I can't, in fact, imagine a stronger board out there with Mary Barra of GM, Safra Katz of Oracle, and Mark Parker of Nike, and James Gorman of J.P. Morgan. Carolyn Everson, who led Instacart. It's a very strong board, but they also have a great team there, a bench squad. If some crisis right now they needed to pick a CEO, they've got a half a dozen people they could almost randomly pick. From the people who are in the management team and people working with Iger, it's the dream team of media folks. If you want to,
we got to leave it there, Jeff. Jeff, always good to see your article in Time Magazine, Five Myths. Great to see you. Thank you very much.
Extra credits for you reading it. Thank you.
All right, coming up, the one word that every investor needs to know today, and our Jim Cramer weighs in on a possible pullback in stocks and what investors shouldn't do. Hear what he has to say. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with the Biden administration issuing new rules for use of AI at federal agencies focused on oversight, transparency, and safety. They include requiring companies to designate AI officers and governance boards, as well as establishing safeguards around privacy. Discover Financial CEO Michael Rhodes, he's leaving the company to take on the chief role at Ally Financial. His departure comes just 1 month after Capital One said it would buy Discover for more than $35 billion. S&P Global cutting Paramount's debt to junk, citing pressure on cash flow due to the ongoing decline in its broadcast and cable TV businesses. TikTok launching a $2 million TV ad campaign in response to the bill to ban the social media platform here in the U.S. TikTok reserving ad time in key battleground states where Democratic senators are running for re-election. Reddit looking to extend yesterday's slump as CEO Steve Huffman and other top executives, they unload shares. You can see shares are down more than 5%. According to filings, Huffman sold 500,000 shares on Monday, while other executives sold a combined 776,000. And two industrial spinoffs, they're set to join the S&P 500 next week. GE Vernova will replace Dentsply Sirona, while 3M Solventum will take the F Corp's place. All right, here's what to watch today. We get initial jobless claims, fourth quarter real GDP, Chicago PMI, consumer sentiment, and pending home sales figures. We also get earnings from Walgreens Boots Alliance before the opening bell. All right, getting a check on futures as markets prepare to close out the week, the month, and the quarter. Taking a look at futures right now, we're seeing still kind of a mixed picture. The Dow looking like it would open up about 10 points higher, almost flat. The S&P fractionally lowers the Dow. That's in negative territory pretty solidly right now. All right, the S&P 500, it is on track for its best start to a year since 2019 as it comes off a fresh record close. Our Jim Cramer says the index could now be due for a pullback, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
We could be due for a pullback. And you know what? We should welcome it, not fear
bye,
it.
Bye, 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 bye.
How can I cheer for something that will cost shareholders money, including my own charitable trust? Because you see, sell-offs are inevitable. They are to be expected, even as we never know exactly when they'll hit. So what? We have to welcome them.
Joining me now is Sylvia Jablonski, co-founder, CEO, and CIO of Defiance ETF. Sylvia, joining us on vacation. Good morning. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So you just heard what Jim Cramer had to say. Jim Cramer also, he threw out some shout outs in there. He also cited legendary investor Peter Lynch, adding that you had just to expect these pullbacks. Again, Cramer calling it a buying opportunity. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree. I think, you know, just the general thesis that I have about investing is that dollar cost averaging, holding for longer periods of time just tends to work, right? So when you get these pullbacks in some of the stocks that you love, like the top growth stocks, for example, the semiconductor stocks, you know, just the S&P 500, the broad-based index, if you're not, you know, looking to cash out on your position, you have this opportunity to buy in at lower prices and hold for a longer time and generate, you know, additional wealth and appreciation. So absolutely agree. It's totally fine. It's part of a healthy market and it's a great buying opportunity.
All right. I want to get a sense of how you see today and also the markets overall. What's your WEX word of the day?
Yeah, so my WEX word of the day is actually quantum. And the way that I see markets today is that, you know, there's this absolute just fervor and interest in all things AI. And AI is, you know, the tide that rises all boats. And, you know, so I think quantum is the next gen innovation of AI. You need quantum computers to essentially process data, to have AI to work efficiently, to actually make changes in all of the sectors that we've been talking about that AI will impact, like, you know, drug discovery, curing diseases, military innovation, things like this. So I think that just supercomputing and quantum is what you have to keep your eye on, especially okay. If you missed out on the rally in AMD and NVIDIA.
All right. So you actually have an ETF that covers the quantum computing space. The ticker is QTUM, not two. But your picks, actually, it's a variety of stocks that you say also touch that space. One of them is IonQ, IBM, Microsoft, and Amazon. Out of all these are obviously the last three are, you know, tech names that we all know. Which one would you say is the best way to play the idea of the prospect of quantum computing going forward?
Yeah, so probably the purest play in quantum computing right now would be a stock like IonQ. You know, Rigetti's another one that I didn't put on my list, but just kind of like pure play quantum. So, you know, they're helping companies like Amazon and Google and Meta harness quantum computing and some of their innovations. And I think that they're, you know, poised to grow if this sort of takes off. They've had awesome growth. You know, this is the first time that revenues jumped about 90% year over year for them. They're starting to monetize on quantum computing. And it's a field that can go from, you know, close to $1 billion now to $40 billion by 2030. Those are the projections. So, you know, 30%, 32% CAGR there, compound annual growth rate, it's a good opportunity.
All right. Sylvia Jablonski, it's really great to see you as always. Again, your picks playing on the quantum computing space, IonQ, IBM, Microsoft, and Amazon. Enjoy your vacation. Have a good day.
Thank you so much.
All right, we also have a programming note for you. Tomorrow, watch CNBC.com for the key data of this week, the PCE report. Morgan Brennan, Steve Leisman, and Rick Santelli will be online with the number, the news, and the analysis. Full coverage. That begins at 8:15 a.m. tomorrow, and that is only on CNBC.com. Before we let you go, we want to take a look at futures. Again, rounding out the week, the month, and the quarter. Taking a look at futures right now, still a bit of a mixed picture. The Dow looks like it would open up just slightly higher. We also want to take a look at some of the other S&P gainers. Again, the S&P on track for its best Q1 since 2019. Supermicro right at there at the top of the list. Not a typo. Been saying it all morning, up over 250%. Followed by trucker Old Dominion. NVIDIA, believe it or not, in third place, up 81%. That's going to do it for us. Have a great day. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.